Welcome to The Good Word, y'all. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie Network, where you get a bunch of NBA podcasts with our season coming right up. On today's show, I will be joined by two Dans. It'll be the world. It'll be two Americas colliding. We got Dan Devine to talk about NBA Levels, the next installment of that series. And first, joining me, my man, Dan Titus, our fantasy basketball guru here at Yahoo Sports. Dan, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. I'm just trying to take in everything of NBA preseason. Most of the teams have started to play over the weekend. So, man, this is the best time to be covering basketball, man. Like, I couldn't wait to turn off Red Zone and all that to watch hoops. So it's been great. Between that and trying to get over the fact that Drake is just washed now J. Cole, man, this guy is on a run right now. But outside of that, loving life right now, basketball's life.
That Drake conversation, that is a conversation for a whole another day. That dude is stuck in the same childhood that he was in when he was little Jimmy. All right, now, but before we get too deep into the weeds of that, Dan, I like a lot of these new faces and old places and a lot of consolidation, it seems like, in terms of what this season is going to be statistics. You got the new big three in Phoenix. You got Dame going to Milwaukee. But let's start with CP3. In Golden State, how do you see from a fantasy perspective? Like, he started the other night against the Lakers. That's because Draymond Green is out, but we don't know what that union is going to look like. So how much investment do you give into a guy like Chris Paul from a fantasy perspective?
So the thing about Chris Paul that's interesting is, like, obviously, yeah, he's on a new team. He's not going to start all the games, but I think it's pretty clear that he's going to get a lot of minutes. And I think the one thing that Chris Paul has proved throughout his career is that he can be efficient. And he's a great distributor and he can still get steals. So from a fantasy value perspective, like, I actually feel like he's undervalued. He's going right now 70th in ADP, average draft position. I think that's too low considering he's never finished worse than 40th in fantasy, which is crazy how old he is and how well he continues to produce. Now, don't rely on him for scoring. Those days are long gone. But, like, for how much he can produce and the system that he's in, this three-guard lineup with the Warriors is definitely going to be effective. And I think people are going to be sleeping on him. So don't be afraid if you're looking for a guard in the mid-rounds. Chris Paul is still someone that can contribute to your fantasy squad.
Do you think he's going to be, like, averaging the same amount of assists? He's traditionally a 9-10 assists a night guy. If he's getting 30 minutes, do you think he's going to reach that number considering he's playing with Steph and with Klay Thompson, two catch-and-shoot guys?
I think a 14-4-8 is probably more realistic. It could probably climb up to the 10. I mean, it's not like Stephen Curry is the beacon of picture perfect health here, right? Like, so right. There's a chance that he's going to see different spurts and minutes of where he can get 10 assists here and there. So I kind of like the upside of it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he's old and he might come off the bench sometimes, but I feel like he's just one of those guys that he understands the game. I like that he's already been putting in more work after practice, working on those dribble handoffs. And we're already starting to see that coming to fruition, even in the first preseason game. He didn't play a lot of minutes, but you could see him kind of building up that rapport with his teammates. So I think it's actually a really good spot for him to land. And while he's not, you know, the starter that's going to be playing 33 minutes, he'll be very well, definitely will produce no matter what, even if he's playing low 30s.
I mean, and you said Stephen Curry isn't the picture of health. Neither is Chris Paul. So
how does health
factor into that with Chris Paul's own health?
It definitely does. But I feel like it's almost like a running back by committee thing in NFL terms, right? Like, you got to have depth. And I think that's one thing that the Golden State Warriors made a point to address. Once you sent out Jordan Poole, you're losing a very high usage guy in that second unit. But I think that these guys can offset each other a little bit. I think it's going to be an opportunity for them to kind of balance each other out and hopefully maintain their health for the long run, because that's been the problem for Chris Paul, especially, is that later in the season, he always seems to get nicked up right before playoff time. So I think that they'll probably be very cautious and conservative with their minutes, but that doesn't mean that he still can't be productive and produce.
Yeah, and it's funny, you talked about high usage. So that brings me to probably the most intriguing sort of fantasy setup. It would be Giannis and Damian Lillard in Milwaukee. If I remember correctly, just not even advanced stat geeky, but Giannis had, I think, the highest usage in the league last year. I think it was him and Luka Doncic, that's going to come down some, a lot, presumably. How do you think that affects him from a fantasy standpoint?
So for Dame, I think he's definitely still going to be a top, 12 pick in drafts. I don't expect his usage to drop too much. In fact, I think his assists are probably going to go up. Just imagining him in a pick and roll situation with a superstar player like Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's never had that. He had to do this with Yusuf Nurkic before. So I actually feel like Dame's fantasy value is actually intact. Giannis's is still good too. He's still going to be north of 30%, much like, the counterparts that you mentioned, Joel Embiid and Luka Doncic. The person that's going to be most affected by this trade is Chris Middleton. And already being noted by Adrian Griffin, he's been pretty coy about his status and his health right now and that knee surgery that he's coming off of. And we already saw last year, he kind of struggled with his efficiency, kind of getting back into that rhythm. And when you get another 30% usage guy inserted into your lineup, Jrue Holiday was a facilitator. Dame is a bucket getter and he can facilitate. So I think something's got to give here. So I think the days of seeing Chris Middleton average 20 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, we're going to see him maybe a little bit under that 20, maybe even lower, under 5 too.
So, and I'm looking at Giannis and I'm thinking that, from a health standpoint, Dan, that he would want to take his foot off the gas just a little bit. Do you see it that way, or do you still think you're going to get the same type of, 28 points, 14 rebounds, 6-7 assists? You still see him being that guy?
I do, because, there's not that much. In terms of scoring, maybe he's still, 28 to 30 range. Like, I don't think that that's going to change too much. The rebounds are certainly going to still be there. He's going to be over 10. The assists, he's sitting at, 5.5, 5.7 a game. Maybe that drops to 5.2. I don't think it's going to be a substantial drop-off, because it's not like he's not adding. Like, he's just adding another asset. Like, if anything, I feel like we could be seeing this version of Giannis now actually having a counterpart that can get a bucket the way that he can. I have devalued Giannis slightly in fantasy, but it's not because of what he can contribute offensively. It's really just his efficiency. So if you're playing category leagues, he's not a good free throw shooter. So you really have to build a unique team around him to offset for the volume that he gets. And he's only shooting, 64% from the free throw line last year. So that's the only hesitancy I have on drafting Giannis. It's like, if you can deal with that free throw percentage, otherwise this man's going to be a beast.
Yeah, and it's funny, because I look at him being this active, super, super hyperactive player, and I don't think that's really going to change no matter who he plays with.
No. And I love everything he said in the offseason, man. He keeps on getting questioned about, why don't you work out with NBA players? He's like, I got to see this, man. I'm not trying to chop it up with you before the game. Then I got to holler at you after the game. Then we got to talk about our families and all that. Like, I'm not trying to get on the mess with all that. So, like, the competitive nature of Giannis to me is like, this guy's a dog. I want those types of guys to anchor my fantasy squad. But then also, you get the pleasure of enjoying watching one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. Now, their depth is certainly going to be an issue for them, much like the Boston Celtics. But I think that they're still going to be, watching Damian Lillard and Giannis play together is going to be great.
Yeah, both of those teams, Boston and Milwaukee, maybe 8 deep, mm-hmm. which puts a lot of added stress on the stars. More on Jaylen Brown. It puts more on Jason Tatum. It puts more, presumably on a guy like Dame, who's walking into a situation he's trying to ease himself in. He's not trying to walk in and dominate, but he's going to have to pretty much at some point plant his feet and become who he is. Right. And I think that might manifest itself, especially early, where he's going to be trying to establish himself. Wouldn't you say, you don't think he's going to like tiptoe into the situation? I think he's going to come out with a barrage.
Nah, I feel like he fished his wish, right? Like, he wanted to get into a situation where he can play with another talent that's as good as him or on his level. So I think he's going to come out firing. Like, I have no reservations about the way Dame's going to perform in a Milwaukee Bucks uniform. I think he's going to be the same old Dame, come to work, put in the work, and then get buckets. Like, that's just what Dame does, man. So yeah, maybe I still feel like he could be a 30-point guy. Like, as you said, it's an 8-man rotation, and it's not like Bobby Portis is going to make this substantial leap. Brooke Lopez played out of his mind last year. Like, he turned back the clock looking like all-star, Brooke Lopez of Brooklyn Nets version. But outside of that, who are you expecting to take this gigantic leap forward? Like, it's got to be – there's so much emphasis is going to be on Dame and Giannis to carry this team. So I think that's something you can put some confidence in when you're going into drafts too.
I feel like Brooke Lopez is like 4 different versions of himself. Like, the guy that started the league, then the guy that was in Brooklyn, than the guy that was, you know, that turned into this sort of drop machine. And maybe he's a rim protector, you know, maybe he's a really good defender. And then the guy that says, I'm a generational defender. And, you know, it's just, he's one of those super, super, super weird people. But speaking of weird setups, right? Team that I saw, Phoenix, KD, Booker, Beal. They are going to be hell on wheels for a top perimeter defender. Like, if you're Marcus Smart and you got to see them three or four times, you are stressed. But how do you see the usage between those three guys? Because Booker played point before, but it feels like they want Brad to play more point because he's going to be a guy doing a lot of sacrificing.
Yeah, and I think we caught a glimpse of that today, and Beal wound up with the most assists, but I think that that might vary from game to game. I think Booker's still going to play plenty of point guard in this unit, and I think Phoenix did a great job in the offseason actually building out their depth. That was the problem I had coming in. I was like, it's cool you got three stars. Three stars isn't really the way that you win anymore, but they did fill out their roster pretty well. But Bradley Beal, the only question I have with him is, like, can he be available? He kind of seemed like he took games off in terms of Washington. Like, he already got the bags. It was like, this team is going nowhere, so why am I going to risk my body? And I think that that hurt fantasy managers. They lost a lot of trust and faith in him. And now he's going as like a fit around the fifth round. But now that the Phoenix Suns have committed to say, like, yo, Beal's going to be playing a lot of point guard, I think that that's a huge opportunity for him to probably get his assists up to like 5 or 6.5, which was where I expect Devin Booker's to be. But I think Booker's could be even higher, man. Like, he's going to have probably north. They're all going to have north of a 25% usage. Durant probably has the ball in his hands less, but that's okay because he's so efficient in the mid-range, and he doesn't need the ball in his hand to create his own shot, right? Like, he can come off the dribble handoffs. I think Durant's all-around stats are probably going to suffer the most, but he's also going to be the most efficient player on their team. Booker's going first in terms of draft capital. He's going around anywhere between 14 and 16 in drafts. I'd feel comfortable taking him there because I think he's going to have his best season yet, playing with so much talent around him and so much emphasis on him being able to take that next step, not only as a facilitator and playmaker, but also as a scorer. So I think Beal's probably going to be somewhere in that 21, 22, 5-5 range. Durant's going to be probably 24, 25, 6-7 rebounds, get you a block and a steal because he's always sneaky with his defense. And then you have, you know, Booker, top of the food chain, you know, getting near 29-30 with 5 rebounds and like 6 assists.
No, it's funny that we're looking at Brad and he has like that stink of the Washington Wizards franchise, you know, on him, because, you know, like, everybody has the stink of the Wizards. Like, Michael Jordan had the stink of the Wizards, you know, on him. Like, the greatest player of all time couldn't lift the damn Washington Wizards, a team that ain't never won 50 games since Off the Wall came out, right? Like, that's like, that, literally, they haven't won 50 games since Off the Wall came out. It maybe even before that.
That's but crazy. What's that, 79?
I think Off the Wall was 79. They didn't win 50 games, and I think maybe like 77, maybe.
I would have thought Gil got him there for a minute.
No. Wow. No. Wow. And they might have come to the doorstep of maybe like 48 wins. They, our team, can't get right. That is just who they are. That's Washington Wizards. Our team can't get right. So if Brad, do we run the risk of forgetting how good he is because he's played over there, and now he's going to be playing with arguably probably the two best players he's ever played with in his entire career, like right now? Do we run the risk of sort of undervaluing him?
I think we are, man, at least from a fantasy basketball perspective. Yeah. I think it is really just that risk of him playing games. Like, 2 years ago, he played 40 games. Last year, he played 50. Like, this guy can't hit 60 games. And if you're playing a season-long league, man, like, having your top 4-5-round pick sitting on the bench half the time is not going to work. But I think now that kind of a similar situation, what we were just talking about in terms of usage and dependability, they're going to need him to be available in order to see this thing through, right? And I like that he's playing in the preseason. He's not taking games off and getting reps like the Clippers already are negotiating, trying to figure out. I think he's committed to playing ball, man. He's had enough time to kind of sit and think, not winning. I think we're going to see a resurgence of Bradley Beal here now that he's playing with two All-NBA players.
Yeah, and it's, yeah. Ditto on all those things. That's what I will say. I guess I'm very curious how Phoenix is going to play this year. They're the most interesting team in the league to me. I'm very curious how it's all going to play out. But sleepers, give us a couple sleepers on your personal list that you're looking at.
So this one might sound as a surprise because he's kind of been written off too, and that's Markel Fultz of the Orlando Magic. Mm. The reason I like him coming into this season, number one, he's motivated to get the bag. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of this season, and he's coming off one of his best years of a pro last year. He shot 51% from the field. He plays defense. He's a two-way guard, and I think that the Orlando Magic is one of the teams that I think is going to surprise this year. They're going to be playoff bound. That's just my prediction. I think they're going to go over their win total. They're going to be way better. And I like to align my fantasy draft strategy around teams that are going to be better than they were the year before. And we're going to see Paolo take that next leap, Franz Wagner take that next leap. And the person that's going to be running that show and that offense and facilitating everything is going to be Markel Fultz. So the one thing Fultz kind of hurts you with, he doesn't shoot a lot of threes, but he can knock down free throws. As I said, he already locks in on the defensive end, and he's going to get at least six and a half to seven assists this year. So that increase alone, along with the fact that he can give you almost 15 points a game, this is going to be a good season for Markel Fultz. So make sure you can grab him as a man. You can get him in like the eighth, ninth round in drafts right now. So, and he can be a top end point guard that I'm expecting to be, you know, somewhere in the top 60, maybe top 70 this year.
Okay. So, and then there's another sleeper in San Antonio.
Yes. That actually did get the bag. And that's Devin Vassell, man, $142 million. I think it's well worth it. I know there's a lot of chatter on X or Twitter about how could you pay this guy so much money? Well, I think the San Antonio Spurs know what this guy has in him. He only played 32 games last year, but I already saw that ascension in him, 18 and a half points per game. Where I'm more encouraged for him is the fact that Wemby's now here, and now right. He has someone to play that pick and roll with. And as a pick and roll ball handler last year, he was 83rd percentile in the league, and he jumped from year two to year three. I believe it was like 1.9 assists to 3.6. So I think that number is going to continue to rise, especially when you're playing with somebody that's as dynamic as Wembanyama. And also Zach Collins is no slouch either. Like, I feel like this San Antonio team is going to be better than people project them to be. They're not going to be great. They're not going to make the playoffs. Like, don't get me wrong. But I think Devin Vassell is going to establish himself as the clear number two option on this team. Keldon Johnson's a bucket, but he's not really an efficient. Keldon Johnson's not an efficient bucket. I think he's going to start coming off the bench. And the way that Devin Vassell can play two ways, man, I think there's just a lot of growth and opportunity for this kid to really go off in year four here. So that's my second sleeper. The one, man, I feel, do you feel me on Vassell, or is it a little too early on him?
It's a little too, like we just talked about availability for Bradley Beal and some of these other guys, and you're talking to me about a dude who played 32 games last year. I get it, though, like, because you're talking about a guy that's on the upswing, and you're probably going to find value because people haven't been paying that much attention to him, so I totally get that. Here's where you open the door, because you just brought up a San Antonio Spur. I want to know where you sit on the skinny bowl. You know what the skinny bowl is, right?
The skinny bowl. What's the skinny bowl?
Skinny bowl is going to be sometime in November. I forgot the date, but it's going to be.
Oh, Chet versus Wemby.
Okay, Chet versus Wemby.
I'm with you.
Where do you sit on the skinny market right now? A market I used to corner. I don't corner that market anymore. All right? But where do you sit on Chet and Wembanyama?
So don't get me wrong. I feel like Victor Wembanyama is going to be the better player, you know, overall here, right? Like, he's the favorite to win Rookie of the Year. That's not a surprise. Although I talked about it when we were at Summer League. I was like, I don't know that he's going to play 65 games. If we're talking about fantasy, Wembanyama is going to cost you a second or third round pick right now. And he's probably going to average somewhere around 16, 17 points, seven rebounds. He's going to give you threes, and he's going to shoot well from the field. I'd rather have Chet Holmgren because he's going to be going two rounds later, and he's going to be doing nearly the exact same thing as Victor Wembanyama. They're going to be high block guys. He's not going to have as much usage as Wemby. That is a little bit of a concern, but he's on a better team. Now that he's with SGA, Jalen Williams, and Josh Giddey, this man's going to have the easiest buckets that he's ever seen, that being Chet Holmgren. And I think that there's an opportunity for him to carve out 15 points, almost near 9 to 10 rebounds, and those 2.5 blocks. You're looking at a top 50 player right there. And I think he's going to play more games than Wemby. So while I have them pretty close in terms of their skill set and their fantasy value, Chet is cheaper, so I like him better for fantasy. But that doesn't say that. That's not to say that Wemby's going to be a bust or anything. Wemby's going to cook.
Totally understand. And for the record, I definitely will figure out a way to get to the first skinny bowl. All right, but this is an intriguing rookie class. In addition to Big Vic, in addition to Chet, who had his redshirt year, like how do you see, like whether it's the Thompson twins or Brandon Miller or Scoot Henderson, like how do you see this rookie class or some of a couple of standout rookies for you?
So in fantasy, I usually don't target rookies because there's always this learning curve and also like they're fighting for roles and getting into that rotation, unless you're like a top three pick like Victor Wembanyama. But Brandon Miller, I think, is a guy that I'm a little low on right now because I feel like there's just not a spot for him to fit in right now, right away. The Charlotte Hornets brought back Miles Bridges. They brought back PJ Washington and Gordon Hayward's still there. Gordon Hayward, I don't expect him to be there the whole time. Like, he's probably going to be one of those vets that they showcase and try to get him off the team and commit to a rebuild. So there's going to be a time where Brandon Miller is going to become relevant. It's just not now. So I think you can avoid drafting him. Scoot Henderson, however, just got the keys to the Portland offense. Like, I had him ranked around top 110. I moved him up into the top 100 because I think he's still going to have his learning curve, but I think he's going to get the assists, the steals, and drop buckets from day one. Like, I think Anthony Simons and DeAndre Ayton probably won the most out of Damian Lillard getting traded, but Scoot Henderson definitely benefited as well. And so I think you can comfortably draft Scoot as a late guard that can get you 16 points and 6.5 assists. I think that's a pretty conservative rookie year. Just be cautious of his field goal percentage because very prominent mid-range guy, and I, you know, when you have those bigger bodies, man, that's not going to fall as well as it did for the G League Ignite team. So, but the guy that I'm really excited about, man, shout out to Detroit, Assur Thompson, man, like he's the guy, man. He started tonight. He had 8 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, I think, in the first half. And I think
he's really active. He's very active.
He's so active. And then, like, even in summer league, man, he had one game where he had like 7 steals and blocks. Like, that's not something you teach, right? Like, that's just innate. Like, if you have a knack for getting around, understanding where people are going to be, reaching out on the perimeter, like, he's an active defender. He reminds me of a young Sixers Andre Iguodala. And I think it's not a surprise that he's already made an impression on Monty Williams, a team that, you know, he took the Phoenix Suns from being one of the worst defensive efficiency teams to being one of the best, like top three in the league. So Detroit made a considerable effort to be like, yo, we got to get our defense better. He put Jaden Ivey on the bench. I'm not surprised because they need a potent scorer on that second offense. And then he inserts Isaiah Stewart too, along with Thompson as a small forward. So I think they're going to commit to this defensive effort. And I think he's shown enough in his game that he's very versatile. He doesn't need the ball a lot in his hands, but he can create and he can score. So I think you're just looking at a very versatile, fantasy-friendly type of skill set that's going to produce right away. And right now he's going outside of the top 120. So you can grab Thompson for super cheap in drafts, and he's going to wind up being one of those Sean Marion, Andre Iguodala type glue guys that just gives you stats, just counts up those stats, doesn't need a lot of usage, just goes to work. So really excited about his outlook.
Yeah, it's funny. Bojan Bogdanović didn't play, so I think that's why Thompson started. But I think he can play at 2 or at 3.
Right.
You know, with his versatility. And they need athleticism on the wings anyway, so I think he's going to play a decent amount. And whether he plays or starts or comes off the bench, I think he's going to wind up playing a whole lot of minutes. And that is our fantasy guru, Dan Titus. Dan, appreciate you joining us, man. With just a couple weeks left. So you can head on over right after you're done with this podcast. It's the perfect time. Head on over to Yahoo Sports and sign up to play fantasy basketball this year. I might even play fantasy basketball this year.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Good grief. Appreciate you, bro. Now it's time for our NBA levels conversation here at Yahoo Sports. What is the levels? I guess I didn't explain that last week when we started off with Jake Fisher. 40 names, 4 tiers, everybody on the Yahoo Sports NBA staff gets a vote. Those votes are aggregated and then put into these levels. Level 4 was last week. We're going to do one level every week leading up to the start of the NBA season. So level 3 is today with the great Dan Devine joining me to talk about his ballot, my ballot, and where things stood. Welcome to NBA Levels, where we here at Yahoo Sports rank the best players in the NBA according to categories and tiers. We're not ranking them 1 to 40. We are putting them in four categories. Joining me today, the great Dan Devine. Dan, we are at level 3. So we're talking about players who are integral to championship teams, but not necessarily guys that we would consider carriers or bus drivers. But we're talking about all NBA definitive all-stars, but maybe something holding them back from being the absolute best player on a championship team. We're only talking about this year only. So we're not talking about your resume. We're not talking about where we think you could be years down the line. We're only talking about this season. We're going to go down some of the names, but first off, we're going to start with these four: Damian Lillard, Ja Morant, Jamal Murray, Devin Booker. Dan, who stands out to you in that four?
Well, the first thing that jumps to my mind as we go through that list of names is that Jamal Murray is the only one who hasn't actually been an all-star yet, right? Like he's that caliber of player, and we certainly saw that in the finals, but he hasn't put it together. Or the West guard pool has been stacked with guys like the ones that are also in this tier. Damian Lillard is somebody that, if you ask me just like, would I believe he could be the best player on a championship team? My answer would be yes. It would be like, you know, how it's built around him. And I think that's sort of the interesting thing about this tier and this collection is it's so dependent on the context around you. Damian Lillard now, after the big blockbuster trade, walks into a perfect context where he's going to be able to go play two-man game with Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's got, you know, defensive player of the year caliber center and Brook Lopez behind him. He's got Giannis, maybe the best weak side help defender in the league. They should be able to cover up for his weaknesses, and he should be able to open up the floor for everybody so much with his shooting and his playmaking in the pick and roll. Ja Morant, obviously, he's going to miss the first 25 games of the season with serving a suspension, but he serves such a similar function in Memphis where his pick and roll game opens everything up for everybody, but it works its best when you've got Jaren Jackson Jr. able to spread the floor, Desmond Bane able to spread the floor and be a catch-and-go creator. It's, you know, these guys we're seeing with all of them. Murray, obviously, the pairing with Jokic. Devin Booker is maybe the closest thing in this group to kind of a one-man army. But right. When we saw him go to war with the Nuggets in games 3 and 4 last year, that second-round series. But even he needs more help around him, as evidenced by the Bradley Beal trade and so on and so forth. So all these guys, they're such superstar talent. But they're maybe because they're smaller guards, comparatively speaking, they're not able to just grab the game by the scruff of its neck and control it in quite the same way as the guys we might see on the upper levels of the list.
When Dan talks about grabbing something by the scruff of his neck, he's probably talking about his bulldog or his pit bull, whichever right. one of those things, right?
As soon as we started recording, Luger walked over and was like, all right, let's go. Come on. So, yes, I am literally grabbing a dog by the scruff of his neck right now.
I'm going to call you Turner from Turner and Hooch, okay? you literally made me watch that movie because I'm like, man, what is the obsession with dogs and all this? I'm like, all right, I'm going to watch this really old movie that I've never seen before. But to your point.
The obsession is that he's a premium boy and a wonderful companion. But sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah, sure. I'll take your word for it. I got my list up and some of the names that popped up early, Ja Morant and... I'm trying to think. Ja Morant and Damian Lillard were level mm-hmm. twos for me.
Same.
Just a little bit higher. And because of the way the voting and everything else, because this is an entire collaboration, this is where those guys wound up landing.
Jamal Murray. Because we work with a lot of haters. I think that's really what we're trying to say here.
Wow.
Everybody else is busting them down. We're trying to lift them up.
Maybe everybody's just being a little bit more Russian judge than us, and maybe that's what this staff kind of needs. Maybe we're being a little
that's
too
right.
kind,
more
a little
Russian
too
judges.
Liberal, right? Okay, cool. So, but here's what I will say about Jamal Murray, who I had ranked as a level 3. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that sort of made his name in the NBA Finals. He didn't win Finals MVP, but let's just assume that he did. Because I think that's kind of like a lynch point for a lot of guys. Guys who won Finals MVP before they became All-Stars. It's a very short list. And once again, he didn't win it, but let's just assume that he did. Kawhi Leonard in 2014. Next year, he became an All-Star. Chauncey Billups in 2004. Next year, he became an All-Star. Joe Dumars in 1989. Next year, he became an All-Star. All those guys became fixtures in what maybe you would call a level 3 or level 2 player because of how they performed on the big stage. I think for me, that's Jamal Murray. Like, he's never actually disappointed on the big stage. He was just never there because he was hurt, circumstances beyond his control. And maybe he becomes a level 2. if health factors in, because a few of the names on the list that we're going to go down and we're going to talk about, you're going to say, man, he should be a level two. And then when I say, hey, how available is he? You're going to say, you're right, he's probably a level three. And that's where we wind up with these guys: Paul George, Zion Williamson, Anthony Edwards, De'Aaron Fox. Not similar situations for all, but I'm guessing Paul George and Zion Williamson jump out to you.
Oh, 100%. It's wild because it feels to like a little bit like 1,000 years ago and a little bit like it was just yesterday because of the way my brain is melted. But we're 5 years removed from Paul George averaging 28 points a game in Oklahoma City and finishing top three in both MVP and Defensive Player of the Year voting. Like, there was a point where he had a real argument for, if not the best two-way player in the game, then very short list. Maybe Giannis, and that was all. So now, because he has missed, you know, with those sort of nicks and bruises injuries, he's played in just 189 of the Clippers' 308 regular season games since he got to L.A., But even within that context, we have seen him be the best player on a conference finalist, right? So, like, if you're asking me if the premise of this sort of exercise is, could you see that guy being the number two player on a championship team or the number one player on a contender? My answer is yes, because, and not just because I've seen it before, but because we know that's there. We know that when Paul George is healthy, he's able to reach that level. We just haven't seen it consistently enough over the last handful of years. And yeah, I mean, that is the absolute, the old game show was the $64,000 question. It's like the $215 million question with Zion Williamson, because every time he's been on the court for an extended period of time, he has looked like an all-NBA player. I voted him for all-NBA 2 years ago or 3 years ago when he was like played most of a full season. When he was healthy last season, he had the Pelicans looking like the number one seed in the West. But you can only, you know, it's like, how much can you bank on it when he has played, as our super producer John Gennaro notes, 29 of 164 Pelicans regular season games over the last two seasons. Like, there's only so much that you can bank on it, but man, it would be pretty to think that you could actually rely on it moving forward.
Zion is probably the most interesting name on this list for me personally, because I struggled with guys who are very talented and put up great numbers, but I don't see in winning situations. I don't see their games translating to winning situations. And then there are guys who are immensely talented, gifted, a complete matchup problem, but I can't depend on them from night to night. And Zion Williamson is number one on that list. And of course, we hear all the stories in the offseason. He's eating right. He's doing right by his body. He's working out the best and everything else. But what happens, Dan, during three games and four nights, and you're trying to replenish your body, and the temptation is to eat badly, because that's what most guys do.
I'm gonna eat badly. I'm definitely gonna eat badly, and at the wrong hours and in the wrong amounts.
100%. Yeah, it's human nature. So I'm not as impressed by what I see and what I hear. I want to see what happens when you start taking bumps and bruises. Like, look, it's a great like analogy. Like, I love the wrestlers when they walk down the aisle and they're all like, you know, they got everything looking right, and you know, Macho Man had the glasses and the hat and everything else on. And after about 3 minutes, he looked like he'd been in a war. You know what I mean? He out there limping, his hair's going in a million different directions, the hat and the glasses are gone, and that man looks worn. If Zion's going to look and play like that after a little bit of wear and tear, that's why you wind up on level three and not level one. Because I think his production says he's a level one player. The efficiency, absolutely, his effect on winning, you know, all the things, even some of the outdated sort of advanced stats, the PERs and everything else. But everything, the true shooting and the efficiency says this guy has an impact on winning unlike few others in this league.
1,000%. Well, first off, a very important fact to note in this level is my wife's company does a big group Halloween party, and they have to, like, so every team has their own theme. This year, her team is all going to be like 80s and 90s wrestlers. Ah. And so they all wound up picking costumes. And then she's the boss of the program, but she winds up with the Ultimate Warrior. I'm like, that dude wore no clothes. Like, he had face paint and he had fringe and tassels and no clothes on. So we got to get her like the Busta Rhymes muscle suit from the Give Me Some More video. But then, like, beyond that, that's all. I'm like, I got to help you find that, because there has to be clothing for Halloween. The Zion point. Yeah, I mean, the thing that was so fascinating about him last year is that when, again, that early part of the season, you saw it start to translate more to winning on the defensive end, too. Like, he's never going to be a lockdown defender, but all he needs to be in that system is he needs to be, like, a complimentary rim protector and a guy who can hold up on switches. And then if he can do that a little bit better than he has been in his early part of his career, it opens up so much more optionality for the way they can play with all the length and the defenders they've got on the wing, Herb Jones, Trey Murphy, Brandon Ingram when he's engaged. There's, you know, so many options that you can go with in New Orleans, and he's the guy that can sort of lift all boats. And then one name that you brought up in this quartet, that's here, Anthony Edwards, man, I feel like this is the last year we're going to have him anywhere below level two. I think,
yes.
You're talking about guys who you can see taking the reins and, you know, sort of controlling a team. We saw him do that, right? Cat goes down at the end of November. And from that point on, Ant is an Iron Man, and he averages something like 25, 6, and 5 the rest of the way. And like, took that team. You know, Luger has since moved away, but he grabbed that team by the scruff of its neck and dragged them Wolves along. And he carries that into a playoff series where he goes for 40 on the eventual champions, averaged 33, 34 points a game over the last four games of that series, rides that into Team USA and is, you know, the best player. Obviously, they did not get the outcome that they wanted in the World Cup, but he was the number one guy on that team. This feels like we are watching a line going up, 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 and an ascent for him. And whether it all comes to fruition this season in Minnesota, where obviously they've got a lot to figure out as they continue to try to work out the chemistry with Kat and Rudy Gobert in that situation, this is like, that feels like an annunciation moment, an arrival moment for him. He's got the deal. He's got the new Adidas signature. He's got the Team USA sort of stamp. He's certified in that way. And I think this might be the last time that we see Anthony Edwards anywhere below one or two.
He is a 6'6", 200-pound shooting guard, ladies and gentlemen, who can jump out of the gym, who can shoot it with range, who loves playing basketball. We've never seen any archetype like that be successful in the NBA. No such thing at all. But there's a name that I want to go back to that we talked about, that you touched on a little bit. Ja Morant. And Ja Morant, I put on a level higher than Trae Young, but I think you have similar conversations with them. I just think we've seen more evidence. We have more belief that Ja Morant functions on the floor, strictly on the floor, functions on the floor better in a winning environment than other contemporaries. Like, small guards have to be really special, really athletic, really supernova in one particular way, right? If you're a small guard, and especially in today's game, you got to be really, really, really special. That's what made Chris Paul really special as a 6-foot-nothing point guard. And Ja Morant, with his athleticism and the way that he can get to the basket, like, you don't necessarily associate him as being winner guy, especially when you show up to the club with guns, right? You don't call him winner guy, but on the floor, he has a profound effect because he kind of knows, he's kind of learning. I don't say he knows, Dan, but he's learning, and I've seen this the last two playoff years, against the Warriors 2 years ago and against the Lakers a little bit last year, where, okay, this is where I got to exert the next 4 minutes. This is where I'm taking over the game. This is where I'm putting my stamp and my tattoo on it. He hasn't perfected it yet, but you can see he's learning. Like, there's an education there on the floor. Off the floor, unfortunately, to me, that factors in, because if I don't know that I can depend on you to be there 79 side of the year, 75 ninth side of the year, then that hinders you from being in level two or level one, regardless of the reason why. You're just not going to be available. And that's, you know, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, whatever the case may be. To me, that's a shame that it stopped him from getting there, because I had him at level two on my list, but I understood why people had him at level three.
I think that's a great point. I mean, obviously, availability is a huge factor in this. And, you know, are you actually able to be on the court to make that impact? I think a part of it that's interesting, too, with Ja is just purely by game. Yeah, I could absolutely see him being the best player on a team that's in the finals. I think we haven't seen from the Grizzlies yet is them being able to take this punch in the mouth and then move forward with it. Like, their ascent, their lineup took a pretty precipitous fall off at the end of last season once we got to, like, the All-Star break. But The talent is there. I love the Marcus Smart move for them. I think that it's exactly the right kind of both defensive spine to add there, replacing Dylan Brooks, but also a guy who's been in more big games than the entire rest of that locker room combined and can, you know, be able to talk superstar young players through what it is to continue to advance in this journey. But even again, we go back to that idea of context. Ja Morant works the way he does. Now, obviously, everything works in Memphis the way it does because of Ja Morant. But yep. Ja Morant works the way he does because he's got Jaren Jackson Jr. back there, because he's got Desmond Bane on the wing, because they've had so many hits in terms of late-round draft picks, and to be able to put defenders and length and sort of fellow havoc wreakers around him that can, when the game gets up-tempo, it sort of unleashes Ja to be his best self. So he winds up in a position now, he's going to have to, it's like going from being a starter to a sixth man, right? He's going to spend the first quarter of the season, or first third of the season, watching and seeing what the Grizzlies turn into without him. We know that they've been successful in the past when he's been unavailable due to injury or other reasons. Now he's going to have to see, like, this is what this team is coalescing into. And then I got to kind of figure out how to get in where I fit in a little bit. And you wonder if having to literally be a support player this season is something that winds up, you know, augmenting his growth a little bit. We know he's about the right stuff on the court in terms of the way he looks for teammates. He's not just looking to score for himself without facilitating. He's looking to, you know, be that rising tide that lifts all boats. But now he's going to have to sort of assimilate to an organization that's moving. It's not moving on without him, but it's going to be moving in a different direction while he can't be on the court influencing it. How he responds to that instead of being the prime mover there, I think is going to be a really interesting thing. It could go a long way toward determining what Memphis's, you know, ultimate destiny is with this group of guys, because I think the sky is the limit with the talent, but it's about finding the way everybody works together, and that Ja Morant's going to have to be a huge part of that.
Yes. That's what I will say to that. Yes. Because, Dan, these last four names are among the most intriguing names on the list. And these are the last four names, and I kept it for y'all just to polish it off.
That's that hosting right there.
And sometimes it's dumb luck. You ready?
Yes, of course. Let's go.
Donovan Mitchell, Jaylen Brown, Anthony Davis, Kyrie Irving. Dan Ooh. Devine, you got your pick of the litter on this one. I'm curious where you go. So I'm just going to let you go, and then I'm going to piggyback off of you.
All right. So this is another one where I had, I believe I had AD and Kyrie both in the level above this, because again, mm-hmm. I have seen these two guys be the number two, and arguably, you know, depending on game and situation, the number one on teams that won NBA championships. They also carry a whole host of caveats largely rely on availability yep. for different reasons, as we've established over the course of the last couple of seasons. But also in terms of, you know, like Anthony Davis this past offseason, this past playoffs, there were times where he was the most important player on the floor for the Lakers and a yep. dominant force. Then yep. there were times where it seemed like he couldn't get going in the offense and they couldn't sort of, he wasn't going to be able to carry things. Kyrie Irving played well, balled out once he got to Dallas, but they didn't even get that far. You know, they could not get, you know, after the deal to bring him in, they just were not able to coalesce and didn't have the right pieces around him and Luka Doncic to be able to actually even make the tournament. So they're fascinating players to me because, again, there's the pedigree, there's the resume. And if you told me in 3 months, these guys are all-stars who are playing major contributing roles to their teams being top four in the West, would not bat an eye at it. Makes all the sense in the world to me. But again, if you're talking about when you get to those higher levels, it's, can I bank on you every single night? And I think the answer to those for these players, sometimes through no fault of their own, sometimes through significant fault of their own, has been, you know, it's a really dicey bet to make. Although teams seem to keep signing up to make it and to pay awful handsomely to do it. So maybe I'm just out of it. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I think people bank on the talent above anything else because it's so hard to come across. And Kyrie is so interesting because if you think, I'm just gonna put the numbers out for you. Okay, in the last two, three seasons, so from 2021 to 23, Kyrie Irving, as a whole, 27 points a game, 6 assists, 5 rebounds on splits of 49, 40, 91. That's some efficient offensive basketball. Now,
absolutely incredible.
Now, you can say on the other half of that, it was efficient the first year in Brooklyn because you were playing only road games. So right. your body was extremely fresh because you didn't have to play the full rigors of the schedule. Okay. And you're playing with Kevin Durant, which makes things a lot easier. Now you're playing with Luka Doncic, and it's hard to account for the defensive end. It's hard to account for how available you are. Like the shame in Kyrie is that he's played such great and magnificent basketball, but we aren't able to talk about it because of all the other stuff around him. And because honestly, he hasn't had such a profound effect on winning in any situation aside from playing next to LeBron James. If you think of Kyrie and Luka Doncic, you think of two offensive marvels. But how can you construct an offense that makes everybody feel involved with those two individual maestros? That's like having two lead singers. And you're right. Saying, okay, who's going to sing backup? Yeah, I'd want to sing backup to David Ruffin and, you know, Teddy Pendergrass. Yeah, that's cool. Sign me up. I'll never get any shots tonight. Yeah, they're going to look good and sound good, and I'll be in the background not getting any shine. It's nobody's fault per se, but I do think it's difficult to construct a really great offense with two really great offensive players who neither are actual connectors. And for Kyrie, we've seen him be the best player, the second best player on a team to win a championship. But 2016 was a long time ago. So it's hard to factor in. It's hard to factor in all of those things along with the efficiency. Here's another name that you circled into the rundown, and I'm surprised you didn't go with. Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell is so, and the word you use is fascinating, and that's the word it is for me, because he is the number one guy on the Cleveland Cavaliers right now. And he fit in rather seamlessly. It didn't seem like he tried to take away from anybody. Or either they just parted the Red Sea to make sure that he was going to fit in, you know, as easily as possible. The fit with him and Darius Garland, like two small 6'1" guards. Mm-hmm. Granted, Donovan Mitchell was an extraordinary athlete, an extraordinary shooter, but he needs the ball and he needs to handle the ball a lot. So what does that do with your actual point guard? Secondly, with a guy I have a man crush on who made my level 4 but did not make anybody else's, unfortunately, you guys are so short-sighted, Evan Mobley. So if Donovan Mitchell is going to be the Cleveland Cavaliers' best player this year, what does that say for this team's fortunes? If you were to place him somewhere else where he did not have either the pressure, responsibility, or want to be the best player in control, 30% of the possessions, A, how good would he be? B, how good would you be? And I think those are questions. Like if you swapped him and Jason and Jaylen Brown, if you placed Jaylen Brown on Cleveland and you placed Donovan Mitchell with the Boston Celtics, what would that look like? Because Jaylen Brown is, according to our rankings, similar archetype. But we think of them as two totally different ball players, like one who can dribble and one who struggles with that.
But it's also, in terms of team construction, that's a really interesting thought experiment, because those are like, that is the exact spot the Cavs have not been able to fill, right? That wing, the big wing between their guards and their bigs. So if you put Jaylen Brown on the Cavs, like, that team is, I think, absolutely ready to roll. And then whatever complementary ball handling he's not able to do doesn't matter nearly as much if you are going to let Darius Garland run the show. And then you're able to sort of, as you know, again, you're maybe a little higher right now on the entire Evan Mobley project than I am, but I agree. Like that, there's the sky is absolutely the limit for him.
I will sit on this island. Give me all the stock. I will sit on this island. Okay.
I am very interested to see what his response is to basically getting stuffed in a locker in a playoff series the first time that he got there. He wouldn't be the first guy to go through that young and then bounce back in a big way from it. So the opportunity is absolutely there for him. But that, you know, going back to that playoff series, that's where Mitchell, I think one of the things that makes him interesting to me is like a super well-deserved All-NBA berth last year, the first of his career. I voted him to the first team. I thought, you know, he came in and impacted winning and was an important, like, as you said, seamless fit on a team that by a lot of the advanced metrics was one of the two or three best in the entire league last season, even though it only wound up as the number 4 seed in the East. But the context that sort of overrides everything, again, small guard in a league where if they can pack the paint on you, it makes your life so much more difficult. And we saw, like, if you the way the Knicks were able to ignore the corner shooters on the Cavs basically put Donovan Mitchell having to go 1-on-3 or 1-on-4 pretty much every time he got the ball. And that choked out the Cavaliers offense. They decided to try to address that this summer. They go and they bring in Max Strus. They bring in George Niang. Even, you know, Ty Jerome as the backup point guard is, you know, a guy that's a plus shooter. They're trying to put more shooting around him wherever they can to try to, you know, decongest the floor. But there are other guys at the highest level, the other all-NBA first team caliber guys, where you don't have to do that for them. They do kind of do it themselves. And so that's the difference. Like, heading into last season, I probably would have said Donovan Mitchell is maybe closer to the 25th best player in the NBA than the 5th best player in the NBA, right? The all-NBA voting suggests something different last year. And then now we find out, was last year exception or new rule? And I think that's going to be, Cleveland's one of the more interesting teams in the NBA to me this season for that reason and for a number of other ones. But Mitchell as a player, like, we've seen him take over, we've seen him dominate. Can you do that on the biggest stage over and over again? Because the early returns from his time in Utah and in Cleveland suggest that maybe he needs a little bit more help than that, or maybe would need to be that great number two next to an elite number one.
Right, right. And a quick note on Anthony Davis, because we kind of glossed over him, but you went deep on him, and I was sitting back thinking, the value of defense in an NBA playoff series goes so much greater and further, even than shooting, to me. Like, we think of shooting in a playoff series as being like the great equalizer or something that, you know, you can really game plan and legislate out of the game. But if you've got a guy that can shut down one side of the floor or shut down the lane like Anthony Davis did against the Golden State Warriors, that completely turns a series. And even if he can shut down a lane and shut down the side of the floor in a series, but you have a superior offensive player basically dominating in the next series, you can see that defense being neutralized. But that, I think, just in general is the value of a guy like Anthony Davis, who, when he's right, and when and if and all that type of stuff, we have to factor in the when and if being a reason. He can be the most devastating and dominant, almost impactful defensive player. Maybe not the most consistent, but you can actually see it and you can feel it. It's more tangible than Giannis, even if Giannis is a more effective defensive player, even if, you know, the DPOYs have never had Anthony Davis's name on it, but you can see it. You can, he's Debo. Give me my bike, punk. It don't matter. Like, that's the thing that he brings if he's playing 82 games in a season, but he never plays 82 games in a season. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is your man, our man, Dan Devine, a part of No Cap Room. And what's the other name of that podcast, Dan?
Oh, are we? It's going to be called Devine Intervention. And this is, they've unshackled me from Jake Fisher and they're letting me run. And we're going to have a little bit of fun with that. So that's coming soon to the Ball Don't Lie podcast feed. Thank you for the plug, my friend.
Make sure you check out the Yahoo Sports website and the Yahoo Sports app to see all of the players listed in levels 3 and 4, and stick around next week to see who made it to level 2. And of course, leading up into the season opener, level 1, the most exclusive level to get into. Thanks to Dan Devine and Dan Titus for generously and graciously giving us some time today. We appreciate them joining the party. Thanks, of course, to producer John, Evan and Ron, and everybody else on the Yahoo Sports staff who put these videos and who put this stuff together for us. Don't forget, y'all, we are on Apple, we are on Spotify, we are also on YouTube, so you can see my lovely face. If you like this show and want to help it grow, don't forget to give us 5-star reviews and let us know what you think. Jake and Dan will be back later this week for a new episode of No Cap Room. Until then, y'all, preseason basketball is here. We're a couple weeks away from the start of the regular season. Everybody be safe.